Well, we've had a great weekend. As always, it is encouraging just to get together and spend time with one another. But we're going to finish our time out together with another fantastic speaker. Greg Jarrett joined Fox News in 2002. He is based in New York City. He currently serves as legal analyst and offers commentary for both Fox News and Fox Business. His book, The Russian Hoax, was published in July 2018 and debuted as number one on New York Times bestseller list. It was among the top-selling nonfiction books of the year, and prior to joining Fox News, Greg Jarrett was an anchor in correspondence for MSNBC for... He said he repented. And so, extending grace, welcome, Greg. We are so glad you are here. He served there for 8 years. I'll move on. And he was an anchor at Court TV. He graduated with honors from Claremont Men's College in 1977 with a BA in political science and earned his JD from the University of California at San Francisco, Hastings College of Law in 1980. Born in Los Angeles, he now lives with his family in Connecticut, and no doubt you have seen him many times on Fox News. And we are so grateful that he has come to be with us tonight. In fact, after dinner, Greg will be signing copies of the updated paperback version of his book, The Russia Hoax. In fact, that was just released February the 12th, I guess just in time for Valentine's Day. So he'll be signing those afterwards. So please welcome Greg Jarrett.
Tony, thank you very much, and I'm really honored and blessed to be here with such a distinguished group of wonderful people. You have done fabulous work for so many years, and so my hat is off to you, and thank you for giving me the honor of being here, although I recognize that you were hoping for Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Come on, you were. But, you know, she and I have a lot in common, so I'm a good substitute. What a week. When you think about it, first we learned that the Russia hoax really was a hoax when the Senate Intelligence Committee confirmed that after a 2-year investigation and more than 200 witnesses in multiple countries interviewed and 300,000 plus pages of documents examined in detail, that they found what I said they would find, nothing. There are still some Democrats, you know, John Warner on the committee is the vice chair. Oh, it's, maybe there's some, maybe we'll find some. There seems to be a fundamental disagreement between criminal collusion and collusion in Merriam Dictionary. And so I think it's a semantical distinction that Senator Warner is drawing. But, you know, the other news of the week is that there really was a plot to overthrow the President of the United States that was hatched by a guy by the name of Rod Rosenstein, who was willing to wear a wire to gather incriminating information from the President of the United States and then go about recruiting members of the cabinet to depose the president under the 25th Amendment, which is a complete misuse and abuse of the 25th Amendment. Deals with incapacity, unable to discharge the duties of the presidency. But, you know, guys like Rosenstein and McCabe and Comey and Lisa Page and, you know, Peter Strzok and the whole gang of corrupt people They don't care about the rule of law. They don't care about the Constitution. They will attack it with impunity to perpetuate their own power. And that really is the motivation behind the Russia hoax. There is nothing that will motivate people in Washington more than the threat of power forfeited. That was the reason why they decided to undertake this illicit scheme, first to clear Hillary Clinton and then to frame Donald Trump for something he did not do. They abused their positions of power, subverted the rule of law, undermined the democratic process, and they still to this day have not been held accountable. They conspired to clear Hillary Clinton despite overwhelming, compelling evidence of her criminality and the mishandling of classified documents. And on the same day that FBI Director James Comey had the audacity to usurp the power of authority of the Attorney General and clear Hillary Clinton, nobody knew but his FBI was meeting secretly in London for the first time with a British spy who was on Hillary Clinton's payroll and indeed was on the FBI's payroll and had been for the previous 6 months. So there was Comey standing in front of television cameras, twisting the law, contorting the facts to clear Clinton. And Christopher Steele was meeting with the FBI in London. Steele, who told the Department of Justice, he was, quote, desperate to stop Donald Trump from becoming president. And this is the guy who had composed the phony, fabricated dossier. On its face, this was a document that was utterly ludicrous. It alleged that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin had been colluding in the bowels of the Kremlin to win the election, and that plot had hatched 5 to 8 years earlier. Come on. I mean, the FBI knew that this document was fabricated. It read like the work of a first-time amateur dime novelist bereft of talent. I've read it 100 times. I never fail to laugh. If you wake up one morning and you're feeling kind of down and depressed, read the dossier and you will be bending over with laughter. It will make your day. It's all based really on nothing but anonymous sources, triple, quadruple hearsay. And later, as I write in the book, Christopher Steele admitted in British court papers that his dossier was not worth the paper it was written on. He cast doubt on the veracity of all of its contents. He called it unverifiable. The FBI, who'd hired Steele as an undercover agent and had admonished him before about lying, finally fired him for lying. But none of that deterred James Comey and the FBI. Armed with that phony document, the dossier, the Bureau launched a dilating investigation of Trump and exploited the dossier as a pretext. They did so in direct violation of FBI guidelines, no probable cause, no credible evidence, no plausible intelligence to justify a counterintelligence investigation. Facts were invented, they were ignored. It was all a hoax. Their goal was to leak the fictitious information to the media to damage Trump's candidacy. That was the insurance policy. And when it failed, they doubled down to destroy Trump's presidency and undo the election results. This was an insidious abuse of power, and the cover-up continues to this very day. The FBI and the DOJ have consistently defied lawful subpoenas issued by Congress to hand over documents about the origins of the FBI investigation and their use of the dossier to initiate the probe and to gain secret court warrants to spy on the Trump campaign through wiretaps. The FISA court was lied to. The judges were deliberately misled. Evidence was concealed. This was a fraud on the court. And it would constitute, in my judgment, felonies of abuse of power, otherwise known as deprivation of rights, perjury, false statements, conspiracy to defraud the government. I list all of them and explain all of them in the book. And who are the people who should be prosecuted for those? The people who signed off on the four successive FISA warrants. James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Sally Yates, Dana Buente, and that guy Rod Rosenstein. So you see, the story of the Russia hoax really is a labyrinth of intertwined stories. To carry out the hoax and this insurance policy of sabotaging the Trump campaign, Comey and his confederates first had to exculpate Hillary Clinton from the sundry crimes that she clearly committed, storing copious classified documents on her unauthorized and unsecured computer server in the basement of the Clinton homestead. So, most people don't realize, but on May 2nd, 2016, Comey writes in a document that Clinton committed crimes. Not once, but twice, he writes down that she was grossly negligent, which is right out of the espionage statute. Thereafter, he holds a meeting with his staff. The whole gang's there, Strzok, Page, Baker, McCabe. And Comey says, but I want to clear her anyway. They realize, well, we're going to have to sanitize your statement. So a month later, on June 6, 2016, Peter Strzok sits down at his computer in his office. Lisa Page, his lover, is there, probably standing over his shoulder. And they decide, we got to get rid of gross negligence because that's clearly a crime. What are we going to say? Extremely careless. Where did they come up with that? Barack Obama, who'd said it in an interview with Chris Wallace on Fox News when he said, well, I don't really think she didn't jeopardize national security. She didn't intend to violate the law. She was just, you know, careless, extremely careless. The interesting thing is, in the law, for those lawyers who are here, you know that gross negligence and extremely careless are synonymous terms. In fact, in jury instructions, when jurors say to a judge, what's gross negligence, he will give them an instruction that says it's extremely careless behavior. But the emendation on Peter Strzok's computer was important because gross negligence is literally in the statute, but extremely careless is not. So they were being very oh-so-clever. But they had James Comey working with and for them. So when he stands in front of television cameras on the 5th of July, 2016, and says, no reasonable prosecutor would ever bring such a case, he was lying. Or he's incredibly stupid, because the Department of Justice had just brought a handful of cases on exactly the same charges. David Petraeus, John Deutsch, Sandy Berger, Harold T. Martin, Brian Nishimura, the list goes on and on. And Comey, when confronted about this by the Inspector General, I think it's on page 286, he said, I remember writing this statement, but I don't remember writing that Hillary Clinton was grossly negligent. Yeah, right. So this is the FBI director, probably the most important decision of his entire life, to determine whether the odds on favor to be the next president of the United States committed crimes. He finds that she does, but he doesn't remember writing it down. That's the kind of guy James Comey is. You know, if you buy and read his book, you better keep a bucket next to you, because it is that nauseous. He is among the most vainglorious, self-righteous, self-absorbed people I have ever met. As I write in my book, you know, his higher loyalty reads like a Harlequin romance, except the protagonist is in love with himself. I tend to be a little blunt and outspoken. I hope you don't mind. But the book is outspoken and blunt, but it is backed up by facts, evidence, and law, and more than 700 footnotes. Everything was meticulously researched and vouched for as true. Once Clinton was cleared by Comey, a decision he had no business making, and of course rubber stamped by longtime Clinton ally, Attorney General Loretta Lynch, the FBI turned its full attention to framing Donald Trump. And this is where guys like CIA Director John Brennan, DNI James Clapper came in. They were both instrumental in politicizing and weaponizing what was demonstrably false intelligence against Trump. Brennan did more than anyone to promulgate the phony dossier, peddling it to Democrats on Capitol Hill. And Clapper? Clapper ensured that it was leaked to the media. And of course, it alleged collusion. But as I wrote a year and a half ago in a column, and I write extensively in the book, the funny thing about collusion is it's not a crime, except in antitrust law. You know, unfair competitive practices, price fixing, and so forth, that can be criminal. That's the only place you will find collusion in the law. But the media latched onto it, and they used it to drive their narrative that the president is guilty of the crime of collusion. They insinuated a crime by using a word that connotes a crime, but is not a crime. Did members of the media know it? Well, most of them are dumb as a bucket of hair, and you know that's true, and believe me, I've been among them for 30 years, and none of them ever bothered to open a law book, and I go in great detail in the book about, you know, guys like, you know, Jake the Fake Tapper saying, oh, that's collusion, because, you know, you dared meet and shake hands with and have a conversation with a Russian. In fact, there's an entire chapter of my book. It's entitled, "It's Not a Crime to Talk to a Russian." I wrote that just for the media. Maybe it'll get through their thick skulls, but I kind of doubt it. So I was immediately attacked when I wrote the column a year and a half ago saying, sorry, but collusion's not a crime, so, you know, what's Robert Mueller looking at? He's tasked with finding something that's legally impossible. And so you get these fact-checking organizations. You know, I love these guys. They're not fact-checkers, they're opinion checkers, right? They don't like what I'm writing. And so they say I'm factually wrong, when in fact it's just that they have a different opinion. So they got four law professors from obscure places you've never heard of. And one professor said, well, it could be, maybe it's not collusion, but it could be honest services fraud. That's great, except, Professor, did you read the Supreme Court decision which says that requires bribes and kickbacks? And there's no evidence of bribes and kickbacks in any of the allegations against Donald Trump and his campaign. Another professor said, well, the Trump Tower meeting, that could be conspiracy to defraud the government. Really? Did you read the Supreme Court decision that requires deceit, craft, trickery, or at least by means that are dishonest? So having a meeting at Trump Tower in which a Russian lawyer comes over and talks almost exclusively about adoptions, but maybe might have had something about Hillary Clinton, how does that satisfy conspiracy to defraud the government? It doesn't. But these fact checkers can't think with those brains of theirs, right? Another one said, oh, it could violate the anti-coercion federal election law statute. Really? That requires intimidation, threats, command, coercion of a government employee again. Nowhere is that in the fact pattern of any of the allegations. So the bottom line is, you can accuse anybody of collusion. We all collude every day. We colluded to have dinner here tonight. Collusion is nothing more than an agreement. For it to be a crime, it has to be a conspiracy to do an illegal act. And after, you know, more than 2 years now, if you include the FBI investigation, there's no evidence of that. All of the people that Robert Mueller has indicted or people who've pled guilty have nothing whatsoever to do with Trump-Russia collusion. The FBI should never have launched its investigation of Trump, but further still, there should never have been a special counsel appointed. Had Jeff Sessions not been appointed Attorney General, it would never have happened. He famously fumbled his confirmation hearing, then wrongfully recused himself. He cited the wrong regulation for his disqualification. There's a genius. He was actually duped by Obama holdovers at the Department of Justice. And the appointment of the special counsel itself, Robert Mueller, was illegitimate if you examine the federal regulations. It says a crime must first be specified. It was not. It's not even in the appointment order. Examine links between Russia and the Trump campaign. They had conversations. Russian officials have said they had more conversations with the Hillary Clinton campaign and Hillary Clinton than they did with Donald Trump and Republicans. But is anybody looking at that? She received $145 million to her foundation from Russian sources connected to Rosatom and Uranium One. At the same time, she presides over a committee that approves the sale of 20% of America's uranium deposits to the Russians. Oh, and her husband cashed a $500,000 check for a 35-minute speech at the same time, and meeting with Vladimir Putin, all at the same time. Is anybody investigating that? Of course not. It's Hillary. Free pass. Because all of the people at the Department of Justice and the FBI were in the bag for the Clintons. So she could do anything, break any law, and get away with it. This has always been an investigation of Donald Trump in search of a crime which reverses and bastardizes the legal process and turns the law on its head. Mueller should never have accepted the job due to multiple conflicts of interest. He and Trump had a financial dispute over the return of Mueller's membership fee at the Trump National Golf Club in Virginia. Seriously. I mean, that would be enough for you and me to get recused, right? But most of all, Mueller is a longtime friend, ally, and mentor to James Comey, a key witness in any obstruction case. So how is that fair to Donald Trump, that Mueller will make a judgment as to whom to believe, his longtime friend and ally, James Comey, or Trump, who fired his longtime friend ally? You know, that is such a glaring and disqualifying conflict of interest, and it tells you a lot about Bob Mueller, not to mention the fact that he hired a complete team of partisans who were also conflicted. And, you know, James Comey, by the way, I mean, his Machiavellian machinations to leak presidential memos that he had stolen from the FBI and leaked to the media to trigger the appointment of his good friend as special counsel constitutes, in my judgment, several potential crimes by James Comey. The new Attorney General, William Barr, should present the evidence to a federal grand jury for potential indictment of James Comey and others. Acting Attorney General Rod Rosenstein should have recused himself at the outset. He was the author of the memo recommending that Comey be fired. That makes Rosenstein, who oversees Bob Mueller, a pivotal witness in any obstruction matter. And, you know, ethical rules and federal regulations forbid a prosecutor from being a witness in his own case. Think about this. Rosenstein was interrogated by Bob Mueller. So the subordinate questioned and interrogated his boss, and the boss gets to decide what to do with it. Let's assume for a moment that Rosenstein lied. Oh, Rosenstein gets to decide whether or not to prosecute himself for lying. This is just infuriating and absurd. Ethical rules and regulations were broken on almost a weekly basis by Rod Rosenstein. The entire investigation is anathema to fairness, objectivity, and neutrality. In a word about obstruction, President Trump was more than justified in firing James Comey. It is not obstruction of justice for a president to exercise his constitutional duty. Nor was it a corrupt purpose, as the law of obstruction demands, when Trump allegedly expressed hope that Michael Flynn would be cleared of wrongdoing. Flynn should never have been prosecuted for lying to the FBI. The agents who interviewed him concluded that he told the truth. But, you know, overzealous Bob Mueller, in an unscrupulous move, went after Michael Flynn with a vengeance, threatening to prosecute Flynn's son and driving Flynn to financial ruin. He finally had to sell his house, his only asset, to pay for his defense. The three-star general finally gave up and, under relentless pressure, agreed to plead guilty. Had he received his day in court, he surely would have been found not guilty. You know, it really is impossible to tell the full story of the Russia hoax in a brief speech, but I do encourage you to read the book. There's some back here, I believe. Afterwards, I'll sign a few, if you'll be so kind. But, you know, knowing that it would be the subject of criticism, relentless criticism, I did go to extraordinary lengths to source it all with, as I said, more than 700 footnotes. It's not a perfect book. It may take months, it may take years, before a true accounting of what I think is one of the biggest frauds ever perpetrated in modern American history. But that's how cover-ups work. The truth is slow to emerge. But, you know, we know enough now about the illicit scheme to clear Hillary Clinton and frame Donald Trump to reach a reasoned conclusion. that the investigation of Donald Trump is the witch hunt he has called it. Laws were perverted or ignored, and the law enforcers became the lawbreakers. And so the final chapter of this sordid scandal has yet to be written, but I think my book's a pretty good beginning. Thank you very much. Thanks.